Hi, everybody. Welcome to The Librarian is In, the New York Public Library's podcast about books, culture, and what to read next. I'm Gwen.
I'm Frank.
And we are here today with Jay Vissers, who is a senior librarian with the picture collection at Mid-Manhattan Library. Jay, thanks so much for coming.
Thank you.
I should say...
Say it.
That I don't know if Jay knows. Well, Jade must know. You know the documentary that Frederick Wiseman filmed of the New York Public Library that will be out later this year, I believe? Have you seen it, Jay?
Yes.
Well, you're in it. And very impressively. You're like sort of steal the show.
Really? What are you doing?
He's doing class. Jay, Billy Parrott, who's in charge of the picture collection, something, whatever. Introduces Jay to the class, and then you introduce the picture collection to them as a college class, I believe.
Right.
You're informative, hilarious, and unique.
Wow.
I found it's a 3.5 hour documentary, and it was one of the most memorable scenes in it. So what? Do you remember when they filmed it?
Yes, I remember the class too.
Yeah.
And that's actually kind of perfect because maybe you could take this opportunity to introduce the picture collection to everyone listening.
Yeah.
Like what it is and what it does?
Yeah.
Yes.
The picture collection is the world's largest circulating free picture library. It has about 1.5 million images cut out of newspapers, books, and magazines. And they are arranged by subject for the use of artists. So if people want to know what something specific looks like a nuclear explosion or a goldfish or anything like that, they can ask us and we can tell them what folder the picture is probably in. It's still used even now in a world where most things are digital. The millions of paper pictures are still used.
Wow.
Wow.
That's cool.
So do people come and just say, I need to draw a goldfish. Can you help me? And then you go and find a picture of a goldfish for them, or you teach them how to find it themselves?
Both. And sometimes the things are obvious like that, like I need a picture of a cloud or of a church steeple. But sometimes people have mood or idea assignments, like a lot of fashion students have to convey a feeling. And they'll ask for something like, I need something that looks like urban decay, but has overtones of hope amid the despair. And if it could be set in Japan, it would be all the better.
All right.
Wow.
Now, how do you deal with that?
That's what we do.
Yeah.
That's why the staff is there besides just the pictures. Because if somebody asks for something like that, of course, there's not going to be a folder entitled that. But we ask people, in your mind, how do you envision that idea? What elements make up that in your mind? And then we tell them to look for those folders and they get the pieces they need to put it together.
Wow. I could see in some ways how what you just described, the request you described, is not that easily Googleable. You know, like I don't know what kind of results you'd get. Like, it seems like the picture collection could easily, or maybe not so easily, but satisfy that request. I can't imagine what kind of results you'd get.
Yeah. You need the librarian catalyst,
yeah.
Right? To be able to like synthesize all the different things they're saying and then spark your imagination too.
Right.
Yeah.
We're sort of like translators or interpreters and we turn what's in their head into something on paper.
Mm-hmm. How did you get to the picture collection? Because I know you've started elsewhere, but how did your journey lead you there?
When I first started to work for the library, there was a program where they took all the new employees to all the main branches in the system to see how they worked. And I got to spend an hour in the picture collection. And ever since I saw how it worked, I wanted to work there. Mm-hmm. And I waited until an opportunity came up and I interviewed for it. And I got it. I was so pleased.
How long ago was that? Was that recently?
That is over 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
You've been in the picture collection over 20 years?
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that.
Wow.
I guess you really did want to be there.
And the people who get there tend to stay there because it's very interesting. And
that's really cool.
The people I work with are smart and interesting and nice.
Good. Cool. So anyway, we diverged, but quickly, were you going to say a comment about the documentary that's coming up about the New York Public Library by Frederick Wiseman? He filmed you because you were very impressive. I thought you were a great teacher, actually.
Wow, I like that. I know my supervisor is very, very good at that.
Billy?
He does the introduction, and then
yeah.
we go back and forth between us. We've worked out a way to describe the collection to people, and hearing it in two voices is better, too. It doesn't get monotonous, hopefully.
Mm. Yeah. Anyway, I can't wait to see the full documentary.
Yeah. Well, so it turns out we probably could talk to you for a full half hour about the picture collection, but the real reason that we invited you here today was because you won the Spelling Bee recently. The library, it's all three libraries, right? The Tri-Li Spelling Bee, it's Queens and Brooklyn and New York Public Library. And so we've now made it an annual tradition on our show, because we've been around for more than a year, which is crazy, to interview the Spelling Bee winner and to spell with them. We did it last year with Rob Kelly, and so we're psyched to have you on to do it this year.
So last year was the first year
that we talked to
them? Oh, no, the Spelling Bee was around.
Oh, I don't... Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I just realized both years, a New York Public Librarian was the winner, not Brooklyn or Queens. I don't know what that means. You can cut that out. Anyway.
A person from Brooklyn was second this year, and she gave me a real run for it.
Really?
Really?
Yes.
Okay, so the first question about the Spelling Bee has to be, what was your winning word, and how did you spell it?
The winning word was algorithm. And it's spelled algorithm.
Right. I knew that.
That's awesome.
I would have won. I really wanted to do this. And next year I'm going to get the courage up and do it. Because I really wanted to. But yeah. Was there a word that you were given that gave you like a moment of cold sweat? Like, oh, but you got through
yes,
it?
Yes, it was a word I had never heard before. And there were words that other people got and went out on that I would not have known either. There was a large element of chance in it.
Like what were one of the words? Do you remember?
There was a word that I got right, but it was really desperate and guessing. It was Kavya.
Kavya?
Kavya?
All right, let's see if we can do that. Kavya.
Wait, you can ask for the origin of the word.
Are you allowed to ask?
That helps a lot. Okay. Uh-huh. That's what helped
the origin or the meaning, or both? What are the rules?
It's some sort of a term to do with Sanskrit poetry.
Well, Kavya.
Can you use it in a sentence?
I don't remember well enough to do it.
I mean, off the top of my head, I want to say C-A-V-I-A, but I'm not committing. But you said Sanskrit. It could be C-A-V-E-A-H.
I feel like if it was Italian poetry, C-A-V-I-A would make sense. But Sanskrit poetry, what if it's a K? What if it's a K?
You're right. I didn't even think. What is it, Jay?
This is co-spelling now.
That's what it turned out to be.
A K?
I very quickly tried to remember, what other Sanskrit words have you seen?
Yeah.
And generally, if there's a C sound, when we transliterate it into English, it's a K.
Yeah,
I can't do this. I'm not doing it instead of an I, it's a Y. So the word is spelled K-A-V-Y-A.
I'm out.
Yeah. Ding.
Forget it. Now you just reminded me very viscerally, V-I-S-C-E-R-A-L-Y, why I'm not going to do it next year now. Thank you.
No, you should still do it.
It's exciting.
You might not get that impossible
words.
Word.
I do love words. Yeah. And I always pride myself in being able to spell, but that one I missed completely. I didn't even think of K, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
Because that little bit of Sanskrit in your head, like knowledge... That's a good insight into how spelling bees can work and how it's using your knowledge of other things that can contribute to the spelling about the K
right,
C
yeah.
thing.
We talked a lot last year about our childhood trauma involving spelling and spelling bees. Did you spell as a little kid? Did you have any childhood trauma?
Are you a tabloid reporter?
Childhood.
Give me your trauma.
Childhood was a triumph.
Oh.
The trauma came later at the library. Long ago, like 10 years ago, the library had an informal spelling bee just for New York Public Library. Uh-huh. And I was the first person eliminated.
Oh, well, and what word? Do you remember?
Indispensable. What? I spelled it with an I instead of an A.
Indispensable.
That's a hard word. Yeah.
Right.
That's a hard word.
Well, that is, you know, this might be sold to Hollywood from tragedy to triumph, the Jay Visser story. When you, your trauma, when you lost the first one and then mm-hmm. you win. Wow.
And
Daniel Radcliffe can play you.
When I was a child, or in, when I was in eighth grade, though, I went to the National Spelling Bee in Washington
as the
representative for Anchorage, Alaska.
You grew up in Anchorage, Alaska?
My dad was in the Air Force, and he was stationed at an Air Force base.
Oh.
And I got third place in the National Spelling Bee.
So you have a spelling bee.
Oh, my gosh. Third place in the National Spelling Bee is amazing. Those kids are geniuses. That is
and
a
you got
serious
third place
life accomplishment.
Nationally.
Yes.
Wow.
All right. Now I'm changing the title from Tragedy to Triumph to With a Bee in My Bonnet, the Jay Visser story. Wow, Jay.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome. What was that word that you won on?
Yeah. In eighth grade.
That you won third place on.
Actually, it's the word you lose on, because if,
oh,
if
right,
I got
of course.
It right, I would have won.
The, oh, yeah, right,
right, so
of course.
Demarie.
Demarie?
Which I had never heard
what
of.
What does that mean?
Still never heard it.
I remember this. Oh, it means to keep bees from swarming by taking the queen out of the hive.
Wow, that's an amazing word. Okay, wait, we so gotta try it. Okay, Demarie.
So bees... Again, B.
Do you think it has demi as its like
I think it's
prefix?
D-E-M.
D-E-M-I?
It's from a French person's name.
Yeah. My first instinct was D-E-M-O-R-Y, but I'm not committing.
Oh, I was going to say D-E-M Demery. See, it's funny. I have a friend
D-E-M-U-R-Y. Whose
last name is D-E-M.
Demery.
I feel like it's A-R-I-E, French, like camaraderie or something.
D-E-M-A,
Demery? D-E-M-A. R I E. That seems too simple.
Could you pronounce it one more time, Jay?
Demarie.
Demarie.
Demarie. I'm going to say D E M A R I E.
You almost got it.
I'm going to say D E M A R I E. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Oh.
It's with two E's at the end.
Oh, really?
It's feminine. Because, like, that, you know, like the two E's usually means a feminine, you know, in the romance languages.
Oh. Uh-huh.
It's apparently named after the person that first did it.
Wow.
Oh, double E.
That's fascinating.
This is really telling me I'm not doing the
video. I would have gotten out on that. My eighth grade self definitely would have, and my current self also would have.
Well, I've told you this. I think I must have last year told the story, but it's a tradition, so I'll bring it out again. In eighth grade, I lost a spelling bee, too. Well, I was early in the thing, and I was thinking I was going to win, and the word was earring. And you know what? And I've told this story. I don't know if I, out of a torn ego, made this follow-up story up or if it was really true. I think I have a feeling I really lost legitimately. But I sort of remember it as this, as being unfair. Is earring is spelled E-A-R-R-I-N-G. And I remember it as me slurring the two R's and they heard one. So I said, like in eighth grade, went E-A-R-I-N-G. And they heard it as one R and they said, you're out. And then I was like, outraged later, because I was like, I really did say two R's and it was. But I don't know if I'm making that up because I'm delusional and egotistical. So, yes, that was my last spelling bee. And I think it might be forever my last spelling bee. Because I don't know if I can handle it. Demarie would kill me.
The words you get out on are always the really interesting one.
Did you have a
story?
Well,
my big tragedy one, I won't go into the whole story, but I got out on the word anise. This was when I was in sixth grade.
Yeah.
Do you know how to spell anise? It's a spice. Like
I do.
Christmas cookies.
A-N-I-S-E.
Correct. You also heard it last year.
It smells like licorice or tastes like licorice.
It tastes like licorice, right?
Yeah. Aniseed. So yes, aniseed. How did you spell it?
I think I spelled it like a nice, like A-N-I-C-E. I had never heard of it. I had no idea what it was.
Was that the last time you beat it? You were in a spelling
bee? That was the last time I did it. Except then the qualifying round the year after, I threw the competition deliberately because I had hated so much being in the spelling bee and having all those people look at me. This doesn't sound familiar to you from last year. I told the whole story.
If you told the story to me 2 days ago, I'd be like,
and I threw it
whoa.
On a super easy word, and the English teacher called my parents, and it was really terrible. I have a very checkered history with spelling because I loved spelling because to bring it back to our podcast, I loved reading. And so yeah, I felt like there were a lot of words in a lot of books that I didn't know. And I, for whatever reason, don't try this at home, kids, but I never looked them up in the dictionary or asked anyone what they meant. I just tried to figure it out through the context.
Right.
And so I knew how to spell a ton of words, but I didn't always know how they were pronounced properly. Well,
that's we've talked about that before, and yeah. I do remember those conversations. But so let me ask Jay, like, is there, like, when you, because I agree with Gwen completely, like, I read early and adult books early and could read the words but didn't know how they were sounded. So mm-hmm. I thought certain words were pronounced way differently than they were. And then when I actually said them in public later, people were like, what do you mean? It's not pronounced that way. Is there a word from your childhood that you read that you thought you knew mm-hmm. how it pronounced and then realized it was a different pronunciation? Share.
There are many words like that where I know perfectly well what they mean but have no idea how to say them.
Like still? What?
When I was a child, I thought chaos was chaos.
Oh, that's
that.
A good one.
Because
why
that.
Not? Why would you say that word chaos?
Chaos.
Chaos.
Right.
It's quite chaotic in here. Bring it down, kids. Stop with the chaos. I love that so much. What? Give me one more. I want to hear another one. I love that somehow. I just find it fascinating.
It would be hard remember? To think one up, but
chaos.
One thing I always do in the back of my head, if I see an unfamiliar word, especially a name, I'll try to think of what it would mean if it were a word.
Huh.
I have pages full in my diary of odd names that I've gathered over the years.
That are not That's actual so cool. words, but if they were, you'd imagine what the definition would be. Like almost like this. You could create your J dictionary on made up words from names. I love
yes.
that. That's a real word.
Lots love. Of names suggest a word, especially in English, ones that end in ER or.
Mm-hmm. Like, well, yep. Gwen Glazer, yep. you're like a glass.
Yep, glass,
maker.
Right. It's
glass
a whole
blower.
Immigration story, yeah. right? People don't speak the language, and so who knows what they thought they were being asked, and they said Glazer. For maybe occupation or something like that.
Right.
And so it turned into Glazer.
Mm-hmm. What about Vissers? Your last name, Jay. What does that mean?
That's Dutch. It just means fisherman.
Oh.
Fisher.
So interesting. Fisher. Like they all translate to different things.
So what does Calarius mean? What
Have we talked about this?
No, I don't
Calarius?
Even know. What origin
Calarius
is Calarius?
Is German.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't changed spelling-wise at Ellis Island when my grandparents came from Germany.
Mm.
And what I've never known what it means, like Colère, what is Colère? Do you know C-O-L-L-E-R? It does mean something. Like it's again, like you were saying, it's a profession, like a collier, whatever, like a horse.
Oh, okay. Like a person who digs for coal.
So, okay. Mm. I think it's something, but then the IUS was always confusing because it sounds Greek. And the only story I've ever heard was from a patron in the library. We were talking, and I don't know how we got on the subject, but I was like, I think she was German. And I was like, what is Calarius? Like, what is that from? And I've told this story before. When you remember it, Gwen. But is that, so she told me that around the turn of the century or something like that, way back, pretentious bourgeois German families added IUS to their last name because it was Greek. It sounded Greek, which is like a philosophical aspiration. So they added IUS, Calarius, just to make them sound more intelligent and, I don't know,
oh,
you know,
wow.
glamorous and, you know, ancient Greek stuff. So I was like, great, I come from pretentious bourgeois people.
That's
And
brilliant.
That I remain.
I love it.
But I don't know if anyone out
there
knows.
On their memory.
My name is Collerius, and it's the only Collerius in the country, except for my sister.
Really?
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
See, we're the only family with that name.
There are a lot of Glazers, but they're not usually spelled the same way that mine is. They usually have an I-E-R, because I think that was the whole glass-making thing, was yeah. like Glazier got translated that way. Or not translated, but, you know, incorrectly written down by immigration officials that way. And so hardly anybody spells it the way that we do. How did we start talking about this? Oh, because we were talking about words.
Word.
We have prepared a little spelling bee ourselves Uh-oh. Here, where, except not really, we just brought some words to spell.
Now,
we've already been spelling a lot.
One of us says a word, and then the other two can say it, and then the other tells us who's right, or if we're both wrong or both right. Is that
sure? Or does spelling? Each one? I don't know how
like
this works.
When
should
you
each
say
one
a word,
guess?
Then Jay spells it, then I and spell
then you spell,
it,
and you don't talk. You don't collaborate on
no,
it. Okay.
Like a B.
Okay, like a B. Bee. So I'll say a word, and then I won't say if it's right or not, and then Frank will spell the word,
and then
you can
tell
okay.
us who won or didn't or both.
Right.
Won.
Well, so I did bring the word from. Don't look the paper. I did bring it. The word that won that the winner of the National Spelling Bee this year got right. Do you know what it was? Have you? You don't
no.
follow it. Okay, good.
Huh.
This is a really hard true. Word, and it's German,
huh?
and it's pronounced Gesellschaft, and it means social relations based on impersonal ties as duty to a society or organization. Gesellschaft.
I think, okay. I'm going to just plunge in.
Okay.
If you don't mind, Jay. Gesellschaft. G-E-S-E-L... S C H A F T Gesellschaft.
Okay. So do you want to try? This isn't really formal spelling bee etiquette.
Yeah.
But sure.
I would spell it exactly the way he did. Except I would put an extra L in it. Two L's.
You got it.
Jay,
that's it.
You're a genius and I hate
no,
you.
No, I took German in school. It's kind of unfair.
I love it. You're a classic librarian. You know why? Because you'll ask a question and you'll have some connection to it. You're like, oh yeah, I was in a spelling bee. Oh yeah, I took German. Oh yeah, I remember Sanskrit. Oh yeah, you just retain those things. And that's why I'm a manager and not really a librarian.
Yeah.
Two L's. Good for you, Jay. All right.
All right. Go ahead.
Should we move on? All right. Yeah. I'm going to use a word that I brought up here before that we just talked about word love and what it means. So the word is pusillanimous, which means lacking courage or timid. Pusillanimous. Of course, Jay will get it. But anyway, who wants to go first?
Should I try it?
Sure.
P-U-S-I-L-L-A-N-I-M-O-U-S.
Gwen, dear.
That's what I would have guessed also.
Well, you're both right.
Yay!
Smarty pants. So far, who's losing? Oh, me. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I get any points for that.
So, good for you. So it means
that was awesome. So yeah, say
courage.
What it means again. Lacking courage.
Or
can you use
timid.
It in a sentence?
I am now quite pusillanimous about ever entering a spelling bee.
That's like a Monty Python word.
Isn't it great? I love it.
It sounds like it should be disgusting.
Exactly. That's why I like it. It's sort of like that pusillanimous.
Yeah.
It's just, bleh.
Because it has the word pus in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, it tripped me up for a second because I thought maybe it had the word puce in it.
Yeah.
But then I think I have read that word before, would not have known how to pronounce it. But I could picture the...
Puce is like a weird color,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, puce is a color.
It doesn't sound nice, mm-mm. Puce.
Nope.
Pus.
Puke.
Pusillanimous.
Right, sounds like puke.
What is pus from? Is that short for something?
Pus is just...
This is gross.
White, runny stuff.
Right.
No.
Jay, would you like us to give us your word? It's like pus.
Gross.
Yeah. White, runny stuff.
This is a word that... I really love this word, and it's dzo.
Say it again?
Dzo.
Uh-oh.
Whoa, what?
That sounds like a mythological king.
It's close.
Could you...
Say it one more time.
What's the definition?
Yeah. Dzo.
All right. What does it mean?
It's a Tibetan word for a cross between a yak and a cow.
Okay.
Dzo.
All right, I'm just off the top of my head, which literally I seem to be lacking because I don't know how to spell. I want to say DZ for sure. Poker face. Mr. J poker face. DZO and maybe some sort of fancy symbol over the O with pronunciation. I'm just going to say DZO.
Okay. Can you say it one more time?
Zo.
Oh, wait, no. DZOU.
I'm going to try it. I'm going to try a T. TZ. O E.
D Z O.
I second guess myself all the time. See, that's why I said before, I work collaboratively. I can't be trusted to resolve something. I need to get data.
If there were a collaborative spelling bee and we could enter together, that would be great. Somebody should do that.
They used to do it that way. There was an organization in Texas that would have academic contests for high school and college students. And they would have spelling bees where every person wrote all 50 of the words on the on a piece of paper. Mm. And the person who got most words right won.
That would be a great way to have a spelling bee. That would be a lot easier, right? Because when you can actually see it, and also, could you go back and correct yourself?
Yes, you could.
So that's way, way easier. But I feel like a lot of mistakes in spelling bees are made because you're just talking, and you're like, oh, no, wait, I didn't mean that. Right. Or, and then you can't go back.
Yeah. But that's very interesting, Jay, because you you chose a deceptively simple word.
Yes, right.
And I tricked I both of us. I gussied it up by adding the U.
Both
and
that, of us
actually,
did.
The U would have been ju or z. I don't know. My instincts were right,
so,
but I didn't ultimately win that.
I could imagine it being spelled the way you did in French.
Okay. Why, thank you, Jay. Your encyclopedic knowledge is starting to wear thin on me. That was so cool. I love doing it.
That
I
was really
it was
fun.
Much fun to listen to because it's fun to do.
I
love words too, like you said, reading it at an early
age. Also, I meant to say earlier, we have a whole blog post about words that readers often mispronounce that we should link to. That's
that
really
so
fun.
Popular.
It came from one of our conversations too, because we were talking about this with Mizold, I think.
So chaos, you said?
Chaos.
Chaos. I'm going to try to bring that in to conversation.
Do you know about Mizold?
No.
Misled.
It's misled.
That was mine because misled it should have two S's by rights.
Mizold.
Like misspelled. Yeah. Well, no, that would be
Frank wrong. And my husband both growing up thought that it was Mizold.
So it would be like, you know, she was Mizold into believing her husband was a good guy. I was like, oh, Mizold.
Mizold.
And then it was mis-
duped or fooled.
Or almost Mizold. Like aisle. A-I-S-E-L-E, the silent S-L. I sometimes pronounced misled mild, if I was being correct. But Mizold was a compromise, but then it was misled. That was my big word.
There are so many words like that.
Yeah.
If you think back as a child, the words you thought meant different things or you knew perfectly well what it meant and you had no idea how to say it.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yep.
I love that. And those moments of embarrassment when you do and everyone's like, what?
Right, right.
It's cool, though. Mm-hmm. All right.
All right.
I feel like I've done this spelling bee. God, it takes a lot out of you. Wasn't it?
Yeah. All right. Should we lead into our book and non-book recommendations? I think we all have some today. So, Jay, why don't you go first as our guest? What book would you like to recommend to people?
There's a book that I've read the first book in the series, and I'm reading the second one now. It's by Michael Grant, who's a young adult author, and the book is called Front Lines, and it's about what if the United States drafted women in World War II.
Wow.
Yeah, I read the first one.
Did you like it?
I'm blanking on what it's called.
Front Lines.
The first one was called Front Lines?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Second one is Silver Stars.
Okay. Okay, cool. Oh, wow. I didn't know the second one had come out yet. Yeah, I liked it very much. I thought it was fascinating. And it traces the lives of a bunch of different separate women, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's like an alternative history.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. Some of the most... I'm always reminded of this by the young adult people I work with, but some of the most imaginative ideas, not just in books for teenagers, but some of the most imaginative ideas in the world of books are coming from young adult authors nowadays.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about that.
Agreed.
And how a lot of adults read young adult literature now, which was not heard of years ago. Mm-hmm. It's true. So this is a series? Is it a series going through all the years of World War II, or is it going beyond World War II so far?
It's just up to the United States entering the war. They've had the battle for North Africa.
Okay.
In the Second World War, and I started to read the second part of it.
So is there anything else that's different about the world then beyond the drafting of women too in the books?
I don't think so. I think
that's the ingredient.
That's
that it
the major
on.
Change.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Front Lines by who's the author? Michael Grant?
Yes.
Cool.
Awesome.
Another YA.
That's a good recommendation.
Okay, cool.
I have a children's book for today, which is called North, South, East, West by Margaret Wise Brown, who is a famous children's book author, but this is a new book. She wrote Goodnight Moon and Little Fur Family and a whole bunch of different things. But this book is really cool. And I actually found out about this book because of our Best Books for Kids committee. Did this like lightning round of picture books last time, which was amazing. They were just like picture books were, like flying through the air and everyone was debating them very hotly. But one of them pointed out, I think very smartly, that this book, it's, you know, the story of a bird. It's a very simple picture book, youngest readers for sure. And it's a story of a little bird who's leaving the nest and saying, you know, mama bird, which way should I go? North, south, east, or west? And of course the bird has to find its own way. And then, you know, the mother doesn't answer. And so the little bird flies north and sees that it's very cold and flies south and sees that it's a jungle. And so the thing that the person pointed out that I thought was very astute was that it teaches directions without being like, these are directions. Like, this is an ordinal direction and this is a compass and this is the way a compass works. Like, it's a fiction book, but it's, there's so much learning involved in it that feels effortless. It doesn't feel like it's trying to say, you know, north is cold and south is hot and whatever. So it's really, it's a lovely little story with a really cool, with beautiful illustrations and with a cool little academic piece wrapped up in there.
Cool.
So that's North, South, East, West by Margaret Wise Brown.
Do you have a non-book recommendation, Jay?
It's very broad, but okay. You said to think of something that meant a lot to me.
Oh, yeah.
I would say if you want to try something very interesting and very different, find any one of Handel's operas and listen to it. They're very much of their time from the 16 and 1700s. They're kind of long, they're very involved, but the music stirs me like no other music can. And Handel, like Henry Purcell, could actually write music for English and make it sound as beautiful as French or Italian. English is kind of clunky and spiky and lumpy sometimes, but he could make it sound as beautiful as anything else ever written. And there's very intimate, tender music. There's very martial, triumphant music. There are always beautiful choruses at the end. I sort of live my life with that always playing in the background.
Wow. Can you pick an opera just for someone who might want to start somewhere?
Maybe find Julius Caesar in Egypt, sometimes just called Julius Caesar. And it's been staged in many different ways, like they do Shakespeare's plays in different times and settings.
Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about opera, really.
Neither do I. That's a great recommendation.
It's incredibly accessible.
Is it? That's the word I was going to use.
And you can hum the tunes.
Wow. It's like a musical.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Take it. What are you humming? Oh, it's Handel.
Right, it's Handel.
Like, very highbrow. It's very impressive.
I don't tell people, but...
I'd love to do that.
That's great.
Wow. Actually, I was thinking of music as well on the way here, and it's typical of what I suggest or think about, like the 80s era, a band called The Art of Noise. Do you know them?
Mm-hmm.
The Art of Noise is one of those 80s bands that pulls in so many different references some of it sounds almost operatic, some of it sounds very symphonic, almost Beethoven, some of it's very like clanky, industrial-sounding music. Some of it's extraordinarily beautiful. I mean, they have a song called Close to the Edit, which has an amazing video, and I've talked about that before, which you can see on YouTube, and then one of their most famous songs, Moments of Love, which is very Moments of Love. But the Art of Noise were one of my favorite groups in the 80s, and they're still sort of like, sound fresh and like revolutionary in some ways, so... Opera.
That's awesome.
And Art of Noise.
Excellent.
It's all the Art of Noise, isn't it?
Yes.
It is. Very philosophical.
Thank you. Gwen, what's your recommendation that's not about...
Is that how I'll feel after I listen to the Art of Noise?
I don't know how you feel.
I don't either. Perhaps I should try it.
You should play it for your son and see what he likes. He might jump around because it's also very percussive and could be very... Kids love that. That could be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thank
you. What's yours?
I'm going to change mine because now I feel peer pressure to talk about music.
peer pressure.
Yes. So children's music, often very terrible. I believe I have recommended Lisa Loeb children's music on here before. Have I?
I don't know. I don't even know if she had children's music.
Okay. Maybe I haven't recommended it then. So Lisa Loeb, who was like a pop star in the 90s, she...
Stay?
Yeah.
Didn't she have that hit song?
You say you only hear what I want to.
You're singing.
Yeah. I'm saying, well, that's right. I forgot to be self-conscious about it. Yeah. But so she is so good for kids. Her music does not make you want to rip your ears off. Like, she does a really
good
yes. A lot of it really does. But she has like a nursery rhyme one. Even the nursery rhymes don't make you want to rip your ears off, which is really saying something. But there's something about her voice is very, it's like very easy to sing along to, and sort of in a very reasonable range, but also it's like a little bit raw. Like, it's not super perfect and it's definitely not auto-tuned. It's, which a lot of kids' music is. It's very like, it, she sounds like a real person who's just like hanging out with her guitar. And so the thing I really wanted to recommend now that we're, the weather's sort of starting to get warmer, is she has an album called Camp Lisa, which is, it's music from her own camp experience. I guess like going to sleepaway camp was really important to her. And so she has a CD that's like songs either that she sang in camp or that she thinks would be good to sing around a campfire or whatever. And it's really fun. And some of them are really funny. Like the original, some of the original songs that she's written for the album are really funny. And then some of the like reboots that she has are really funny, like Home on the Range is on there. And so my son is always like, I want to hear the Buffalo song.
Oh.
And there's also, what song is it? Love is a Rose. You know that song?
Camp song?
Love is a rose, but you better not pick it. It only grows when it's on the vine. Okay, now I've sung twice.
Vaguely.
I think it was a Linda Ronstadt song.
Love is a rose,
it's really,
but you better not pick
it. Yeah, it's really catchy. Funny. And like hearing a two-year-old sing that song is extremely amusing. Aww. I have to say, it's really funny that he like sings Love is a Rose just randomly.
I was going to say like some of these like children's song records that appeal to adults probably partly because they love making fun of their own kids.
A little.
Laughing at the kids.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Love is a rose.
Right.
Yeah, it's almost like unbearable.
I know. It's kind of
unbearably cute.
It's right. It is unbearably cute. And also, you know that they're not sort of absorbing the like deeper messages of it necessarily. Right. It's very funny. So maybe that's screwing up my kid badly.
No.
But anyway, it's really fun.
The haircut you gave him might be doing more damage. We talked about this off air. She cut her son's hair with a clipper and it's now like...
Oh, it's terrible.
It's a little
patchy.
Patchy.
It's so terrible.
And the kid thinks it's hilarious, but she just like... Because he can't really see it.
Right.
But
he just thinks it feels fuzzy. Oh my gosh. Anyway. It's really
Camp
terrible.
Camp Lisa.
That was a major fail. So yes, Camp
children's
Lisa
songs.
By Lisa Loeb, and really all of the children's music by Lisa Loeb is great.
Cool.
The library has it. Check it out.
Okay, great.
All right. Well, Jay, thank you so much for coming. This was really fun. I had a great time spelling with you.
Thank you for having me.
Oh.
And so please review us in iTunes if you have a moment. It makes us really happy to see reviews, and it helps other people find the show. You can check out the show page and go to nypl.org/podcast to see a full rundown of all our episodes.
People can't submit words through the comments because they'll have to spell them.
Right.
There's no audio way or something. I'd love to
do. A little like file attachment of you saying a word.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt.
That would be cool.
People could submit their favorite words to spell.
Yeah. You can tell us, you know what you could do? You could tell us your favorite word that you used to read on paper and think was said differently.
Yeah,
and
that's
we can see
cool.
If we don't, we might not have it written on our big compilation sheet. So you can find all of us on Twitter at NYPL Recommends, at J Market Library.
Correct.
And also, you should definitely check out the Mid-Manhattan Picture Collection on Instagram, which is super amazing and beautiful. And it's at NYPL Picture Collection.
Because Picture Collection is visual and Instagram is as well. So
yeah.
There's some pretty cool pictures on the Picture Collection Instagram.
Cool.
Yay.
Yay. All right. Thanks again for coming, and we will see everybody next week.